Thank you very much, Janet. So if anybody would like to speak their brains, anything you'd like to contribute or question, go ahead. Brian, thanks.
Thank you very much for those reflections. I'd just like to ask you your reflections on a friend and a colleague of mine called Keith Hart, actually. I teach at Goldsmiths College, and a couple of years ago, a decade ago, I had two colleagues. One was David Graeber, and the other was Keith Hart. Both of them left Goldsmiths for higher places, like the LSE. Keith Hart's quite an interesting. He wrote a book called, he was fascinated with money all his life. He was fascinated with money, and he taught at Goldsmiths, he taught economic anthropology, and he was fascinated with money. And he wrote a book called Money and Unequal Society. Okay. And what he argued, that for a moneyless society at all. He didn't equate a moneyless society with socialism. And I wrote a quote of his, because I had lots of arguments with him. And I'll have to put my glasses on. I wrote, this is a quote from his book, Money in a Unequal World. This is what he wrote. Money is the problem, but it's also the solution. We have to find ways of organising markets as equal exchange. And that means detaching forms of money from capitalist institutions as they're currently defined. And he always kind of argued, look, Brian, you know, you've got to separate the market, okay, from capitalism, okay? The market is an ancient phenomenon. It goes back, historically goes back, so does money, goes back a long way. But capitalism is modern. Capitalism is a specific social institution which is recently modern. It's a specific institution. It's not a thing like a lot of the capitalists argue that it goes back into history, you know, with sort of Adam Smith. It's actually very specific. And it began at the end of the 18th century. And there were two reasons why it began. One was the Atlantic slave trade. And the plunder of resources. The other was the enclosure of the commons. And what it led to, completely different from any other market kind of things, was the commodification of two things. The commodification of land and the commodification of labour. And that was it. And that was his basic argument. So he kind of, that book is all about saying, what we need is not a moneyless society, but a socialist society that includes the market and money. And of course, as you probably know, lots of them, there's a lot of people from Proudhon onwards actually argued for a kind of market kind of socialism, you know, that kind of thing. What I'd like, actually, is your reflections on my old mate Keith Hart, actually,
well,
what
he
had to say.
Shall I stand up? Is it easier to hear? I'm sure most people here, I just sort of want to laugh, really. I cannot see that, you know, we've been into it in so many different ways. Where is it ever when people try to do something like that? Because who's got control of the thing? The system that is using the money and as the money system now and controlling the money, because we don't control the money system. We only have the bit that we can get. And we have to do the best we can do with it. But the people who have the power to control that, are they ever going to hear such a thing? And, you know, there have been so many, through the ages, there seem to be so many ideas of how we can control the money system, just to make it better for people here. Has there been a glimmer of anything getting anywhere close to doing anything that is beneficial? That's all I can say. It just seems to me almost a waste of time talking about it. I don't wish to knock him or whatever. It's almost like I got beyond this thing. Why? How can you possibly explain when someone is so entrenched that they have to be able to see the other side, that money is part of the capitalist system. The capitalist system just pulls the strings, and money is it's almost like the cement that holds it all together, isn't it? It's what makes it work or not work. You know, work sometimes and not work other times, or work for a few and not work for a lot of us. I can't possibly get into it. I can't get my head around such things, I'm afraid. If anybody would like to help me with that, has got something more sensible than I said, please do. But it leaves me at a loss.
I think you're starting to or that things become even more complicated when you start to break it down in those kind of fashions. They say simplicity is genius, you know, there can be nothing more straightforward than a complete transformation from the world that we currently live in to one without money in exchange of any sort. Everything ought to and has to be done on a cooperative, non-monetary way. I recently went to a website, I was trying to organise us a holiday for my daughter, who's crazy about ABBA, and I went on to the ABBA website, Stockholm. They have a museum. One of the headlines was ABBA, the group ABBA, and the members of the group are increasingly in support of a cashless society, because not to be confused with a moneyless society. And I got a bit excited as I thought, oh, it must be free or whatever. And it could have been a bit positive. But no, what it was, it was something in this case, you had to buy your tickets in advance electronically. And that was the only way you could get in there. There's no other way of getting in unless you had your ticket. So that was that, yet another form of exchange. I sometimes lead this kind of Walter Mitty kind of life, you know, and it gets back to the whole sort of notion of, you know, cash in hand and you know, not being able to do anything without cash. There's some of the other talks and the points were made, particularly by Danny the other day. When you buy your holiday in advance, one of these all-inclusive kind of things, you know, and everything's done in advance. So, I mean, I rarely carry cash with me, you know. It almost feels like sometimes I live in this kind of bubble, you know, where I can get up in the morning and do all the things that you've described. Mm-hmm. I've got a bus pass that allows me to travel free.
Yeah.
They've been paid somewhere down the line. I can go for days and sometimes weeks without actually handing in any cash. And it's one of the strongest arguments I make to someone when I'm actually discussing the possibility of a moneyless society. You know, I mean, despite my size, you know, I'm not particularly greedy. I don't take pointless journeys on the bus. I don't drink your copes of unnecessary water and take big deep breaths. One of those traditional kind of arguments that we often make. And it's so very true. People can then start to grasp the sheer irrelevance of money, that it is. It's just, it's nothing. It doesn't, you know, say money makes the world go round. Well, of course it doesn't. We know that as socialists. Somehow or other we need to get this point across to a level that people can understand who haven't grasped the idea of a moneyless society.
Absolutely.
And I find that a great way of doing that, you know, to show. But as time goes on and technology is increased all the time, we've seen a lot of banks getting rid of checkbooks and things, for example. Most things are done electronically now, you know, so money's become increasingly less of a physical sort of thing to be used, you know, and I think you can expand that and build on that idea into people's heads. It becomes more and more attractive, you know. And that's one of the things I wanted to say, you know.
I'm not sure that requires an answer, does it, Paul? Do you want me to
just
comment on this? Yes, that's great.
Okay. There's three at the moment in the list. Bill first, then Kevin and Vincent.
Well, Janet, you were saying about artificial borders, and I think it's, and some of the ideas of what he wants. Kind of struck a chord. People probably know in my hometown, or where I'm from, Redcar, in the last year, the steelworks closed down, and the loss of a couple of thousand jobs, unemployment there is now about 16%, and people getting very angry, they're blaming the Chinese, they're saying why didn't the government impose tariffs, and they say that the Chinese are dumping steel, they're selling it below value because they've produced so much, and it's kind of like the topsy-turvy idea of the world. The fact is that the Chinese in the last 2 years have produced more steel than Britain ever has.
Yes.
So the idea that in any way or shape or form Teesside is ever going to keep on competing with that is just laughable. But the thing is, the fact that is that they're producing this much steel, colossal quantities of useful steel that can be, you know, used all over the world for all sorts of building projects, should be a wonderful thing.
Yes.
We should all just go around and go, yes, there's more steel. And yet what it's done is it absolutely trashed my hometown.
Yes.
It's caused absolute misery and despair. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just what a... Just the whole idea of nationalism, money, what an insane topsy-turvy world that we've got right in front of us. It's just that we can't, you know... The media, on the one hand, is just filling us with this, you know, nationalist filth and hate to say it's the Chinese's fault.
Yes.
It's those filthy foreigners. Right. When the reality is that it's something wonderful happening in the world that we're producing more. And our fellow workers, admittedly, in China at the same time, 500,000 COVID steel workers were laid off because they've had their own little mini crisis over there. Compared to our 1,200 or so, neither here nor there. But it's the ideology of the money system that seems so incredibly crazy.
Yeah, and you know, from this laying off, it isn't because there isn't a need for what they're making or doing, producing. That isn't what it is. It's just that the need is in the wrong place, or the money factor, isn't it? Everywhere along the line in that, and we have so resources around the world. Okay, some places are short of this resource. Other places are short of this resource. But as a world community, there are more than enough resources, and especially when you think that our way of using any resources is with minimal waste, or the idea is like a steady state, isn't it? Where it's ever it's possible, you have no waste, or the waste is used elsewhere for something else. Not just that you trash things, because it's cheaper to trash things and leave the mess where people live and go to school and, their drinking water gets poisoned, whatever. They will do that just because they don't want to spend any of their profits keeping it healthy for people. And that plays into the same thing, doesn't it? And then all those like workless people now in Redcar. Well, think about, I bet in Redcar and the surrounding area, I bet there's all sorts of stuff that needs doing for people. I bet there's all kinds of houses that need repairs or improvements or rewiring or better plumbing systems. I bet the roads are suspect, possibly. I can't believe the roads in this country, quite frankly. They're awful, aren't they, lots of them? And, so many things that people want. What about communities? Who hasn't got anywhere in their community that or a place that people can actually use together? Or even if you've got a village hall, you've probably got to pay for it, haven't you? Just have a little function. Do you see what I'm saying? Oh, there's people in Redcar would love to be having something to do instead of sitting on their arses and reading the paper or watching TV and then getting other people saying, oh, look, they're on benefits or something. But there's so much that these people could be doing. There's so much in this small country. And you think of other countries, every country is different as far as that goes. They've all got their different needs. You think about Africa and Asia, where you've got, India, for God's sake. The level that some of those people are living in, but they are working from morning till night on rubbish tips and kids this size to try and earn a few rupees so the family can have at least something to eat that day. Now, yet their infrastructure and so much of their stuff is appalling. Those people, all they want to, yeah, of course they're going to. They're not going to say, oh, now we've got socialism, I don't have to do any work. And the people are used to doing stuff. People just will do the stuff that they, there's so much stuff that they would choose to do for their society rather than what they have to do because of the way the system is. People in their communities would be saying, okay, well, we need how many hundreds of houses do we need here for a start off? Accommodation, fresh water, blah, blah, blah. So let's get mucking and do that. We've got the resources free. We get stuck in. This is what we're doing. This is our work for everybody. And, the little thing I did about getting up in the morning and just thinking of what you need in a day. How many people... Just look at this room. How many people have we relied on for there to be a room here for us to come and sit down and then go and have dinner and God knows what? We're all doing it, aren't we? In our way. And it's the wastefulness. So, so wasteful. Sorry, I think I've gone on a bit there, but I do feel passionate about this.
Quite right, yeah.
Sorry, Robert.
Sorry. Kevin.
When I first thanked Janet for a stimulating, informative,
thank you.
Extremely interesting
conclusion.
Let me posit myself, because I want to ask questions about patriarchy.
Yes.
Working class life, born in South London, brought up by his mother, our mother, when we were both male, brought us up on our own, because my father was not present, right? And this business about patriarchy, it bothers me slightly because in my time as a man, I don't know what I'm going to put in the next karma, but I don't know of any group of men that I've ever mixed with who want necessarily to dominate women. You know, my life's improved with this woman around, and certainly I wouldn't, you know, I've been at home if it wasn't for my mother, and actually did some jobs. But people like me have worked for them, like we all have. I mean, I don't really have any power. My employer has power. And there's, I don't have any concerted effort, as I say, of men to try and put women down. So, you know, I'm uncomfortable about this concept of patriarchy because for people like me, I don't think it exists. So,
can I? I think they. If I could say, you know, I'm always very simplistic about stuff. This is the way I see it. I would say don't mix up patriarchy with sexism. That might be the way of thinking about it because, you know, of the men I know, I wouldn't like to say a percentage, you know, as far as that goes. The patriarchy thing is that has been part of society and hierarchy, especially hierarchy. Sexism comes down to things like, you know, on individual basis where you know, you still hear occasionally men make all these silly jokes about the wife or the, you know, that's, but it, that, you know, that's sort of really not very important. That's a sort of a sexist thing. I wouldn't put that down to patriarchy at all. Do you understand what I'm saying there? But,
I do, but
patriarchy. Yeah, well, if you think, yeah, go on.
It just seems to me, I'm not saying it's a man hating thing.
No.
But sometimes it's construed like that. You know, that we are the enemy. In fact, we're not. Capitalism's the enemy.
Absolutely.
People with power and money are the enemy.
Absolutely.
You know, not only working class people like me, only working class men. And the point is, you know, I hear this business about, oh, we need a woman leader for the Labour Party. Well, you know, there's not going to be, well, they all need personally saying, it doesn't matter really for me if it's a man or woman. Mm. Is that person competent? Mm. It shouldn't be, oh, I've got children, I understand more. There's lots of people without children in the country, a lot of disabled people come. When we start breaking each other down, oh, men bad, women good, the rest of it, you know, we get into a real mess. So.
Yeah, but it's also like, it's also like the racial thing, you know, because if you could not see, if you could take, have interviews with a person and not see if they are black, white, male or female, then you could choose the best person for the job. Yeah. But of course it doesn't work like that, does it? The patriarchy thing is really, it's just like, it's sort of entrenched. Now, this country is one which I'm happy to say has slowly moved away from it, but hasn't got there yet, and is moving away from it. And I know personally an awful lot of men who recognise that, but it doesn't mean that they are it or not it. It's not, that isn't it. We don't blame, because you are mostly men here, that this is a patriarchal meeting or something. It's not, it isn't like that. It's, you know, it's how, to do with the organisation more than anything. A few years ago here, didn't they have, they sort of had this positive discrimination. We must have more Asians in the police force. We must have more women in Parliament. This kind of thing. I'm not sure if that works either. You know, it isn't how we should be looking at. We should be somehow learning to see each other for what we are. We're all just people. Some of us are sort of female gender people. Some of us are male gender people. Some of us are a bit of a mix of both. And as far as colour, well, there's whatever you can see. Yeah, go on. I shouldn't be saying
that. There's lots of people know I'm interested in football. You know, I love football. And some kind person here, bless her, said that I look like a footballer again.
I wonder who.
Can I just say that when I used to run a football team, or me and my brother owned the team, it didn't matter whether you were Asian, African, Chinese or whatever, civil service, the only thing that got you into the team was whether you were good enough.
Yeah.
That was it. There was no other standard.
You might need summer school next year devoted to this question.
I've
got two down at the moment, Vincent next and then Carla.
I think one of the enormous advantages of the establishment of socialism will be the liberation of humanity, from alienation, fear, and suspicion, which those three elements really dominate the world as is. And if we can just come back from the world, the global world that we live in, just to this place where we are at the moment, although there are millions of other places like it on this planet, where that alienation of fear and suspicion exists. And by that, I mean locks, keys, passwords. Mm. Passwords when you're on your computer, uppercase, lowercase, alpha, numeric. And if your password isn't strong enough, you'll get a little message saying weak. What are locks, keys and passwords all about? Protecting yourself as an individual from those people out there. The worry and the fear that people have about possibly losing some of their property, their money, other people trying to get it, etc. That is par for the course, quite clearly, in the capitalist world. And it always has been, while capitalism is about, and of course in the pre-capitalist society. And that, for health, mental health, and spiritual reasons, and things like that, will be one of the big benefits we'll have a society. Of course, there people will still have their worries and concerns. We're not talking about some perfect world. But there will be that removal of the pressures of one human being competing against another, one area of the world vying with the other one. Mm. All of that will be, all of those fears and alienation will be, in the basic sense, removed. And that is surely be a tremendous plus for socialism over what we've got now.
Absolutely, and as for competition, you know, because there's so much competition, there's fear of someone getting in whatever, you know, whether it's in the work situation, you're talking about like locking your home, if you like, that sort of thing. That people won't need to walk into your home and take something from there because they can go and get it anyway. But as far as competition, I mean, there's certainly something healthy about competition, but then it can be in sports, in games and, you know, recreation. I think that is also a very positive thing, you know, that people can relax on the level that you say. I absolutely agree with what you said. It's all good news. Really?
Can I let?
Okay, Kevin, I've got to come back on this. Kevin is talking about his own personal experience. Great, you're a nice bloke. And you probably have friends, the way you perceive the way your friends treat women or talk about women, probably okay. I can talk about my experience. I personally never felt oppressed by any man in my life. But to say... To deny that women are not oppressed all over this world. Women are incredibly oppressed. Men run this world. You can't deny that. And of course, it doesn't matter whether your boss is a woman or a man. Yeah, as socialists, we're against the bosses. But you can't use your personal experience to say, because I don't oppress women, women are not oppressed. That is ridiculous. Sorry.
May I respond to that? to say that I'm only using my personal experience, this is who I am. I'm not anyone else here.
Correct.
I can't use your experience or your experience because I've not had your experience. I've had my experience. That's my testimony.
But you see the world.
Well, can I just... About another minute and I'll finish. And so that's the only thing I can draw on is that. And as I try to say, to qualify it, there are people in society, the rich, who've got the possibility of oppressing people, but me, a working class guy, I've got no power to oppress women, neither do I want to.
Okay.
And, you know, and I don't... Well,
Can I put it this way, like the personal thing? I would say you do not feel, if we talk about the things that happen in capitalism, you live in a capitalist society, you are part of it, like it or lump it, or your day, you know, from morning till night, but you are a socialist, so therefore you... if somebody sort of, I don't know how, I did have an idea here and it's not working out quite right. But it was this thing, looking, yes, we all have a personal experience, but when we are looking at something part of the capitalist system, we're trying to look at the whole thing. Perhaps what I should have said is, let's say you look at patriarchy in Asia. So, you know, where you've got the honour killings and, you know, those sort of things, which is definitely, you know, run by the men relatives of a girl who's, God knows what she might or might not have done, probably not, you know, and there'll be an honour killing. You look at that. Now, if you were an Asian man, there are many Asian men who wouldn't dream of doing such a thing to their daughter, wife, sister, whatever. So... Their personal experience will be like yours, how you feel it here. I would say it's not something to be taken personally. It's to be seen as a communal or societal thing. Does it put it in perspective?
I'm not taking it personally. All I'm doing is I'm drawing on my personal experience, and I'm not anyone else. I have to give my personal experience. That's all I have.
Yes, but we don't want to hear just about... You know, in a world of like 7 billion, whatever, we can have lots of single experiences. But what we're trying to look at here is the overall collective state that we are still in with patriarchy, and it has different levels in different countries. Yeah, I think that was the point I was trying to make. It's still there in everywhere in the world, but at different levels. Okay.
I think just because someone hasn't experienced something doesn't mean to say that it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. I mean, prejudice, yes. Bigotry is an inherent symptom of society-wide, you know, that there's no doubt that these things do exist, albeit that someone hasn't either influenced it or experienced it, yes. Or imposed it on someone. That doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. It clearly does exist, whether you're a man, a woman, gay... Mm. Sexuality, disability.
Yeah.
Clearly, the overwhelming majority of people are oppressed in some form or another.
Yeah.
Jacqueline first, then James.
Sorry, Janet, you've opened a can of worms there.
Have I? Oh, good.
That's a good thing.
Yes, it is.
And I can imagine Carla's anger. You're all right, you're all correct, unfortunately, because it exists. This has gone back since before biblical times. Let's get real here. Forget about England for the moment. But I can tell you now, in the 1990s, the amount of women that were murdered by men because they didn't like that there wasn't a dinner on the table, I'm not making this up. You can go back to the newspapers, it's online. These cases from the Old Bailey are online. These women went to prison. Other women stood outside the courts. This is England. I'm going to tell you about the rest of the world in a minute. These women were murdered for things like not having the dinner on the table in England, London. A policeman was murdered. That woman was sent to prison for life. The campaign went on forever. These stories were in the news writ large. It was called domestic violence. It's such a stupid term. In the 50s, women were valiumated. That's how I use the word. The word, and some of you are old enough to know Valium. The men came in, homosexuals getting married to women because they couldn't get a job in this country. I understand your pain as well. But why should women put up with that? I'm not making this shit up. In Africa, and I, to my shame, I never knew anything about matriarchy or patriarchy. There's an opposite as well that exists or did exist. In Africa, I actually defended female genital. I am ashamed of that.
Yes.
It was only in the 70s when I did women's studies in a safe, secure environment, we used to call it. Men were laughing, throwing things at the windows, because we were a bunch of stupid lesbians and all this nonsense. If women get together, we can't be heterosexual, we must be getting up to something. Shit like this. But female genital mutilation, let me give you an example of patriarchy, where children are taken and their genitals, it's actually sliced and sewn up. So it's pleasure for the man. Tell me what that is. This goes on all the...
Is this being directed to me?
No, it's to the... this is my way of doing things, isn't it? You are correct, I understand you. I mean, most women love men. Where would we be without them? But there are, you know, there are women who are bullies as well. Now, why should a man have 8 wives? You tell me that. In America.
He is bloody stupid.
No, you know what I'm saying?
That's not sexist, is it?
In the Baptist West, America, Africa, India, and you can't say anything. Or men who come from, like Janet said, Asia. They come to this country marrying children. And all this nonsense. This is patriarchy. Where you're not allowed to say anything. But back to the domestic violence thing, which is a tip of the ice world all round the world. A 16-year-old girl had the nerve to stab a pimp. He died. 16 years of age, I'll never forget her name. She came from Canada. Her name was Emma Humphreys. That's how I got involved and started to learn what goes on in this stinking world where women get their lips sewn and shit like that. I mean, there's so much more. I kind of like had forgotten about it, because in England, things are, you don't see a lot behind the closed doors. You've got to go behind the closed doors to see what goes on in. A lot of men are brutal. They really are. But it's like a class, I can't call it a class thing, because it's the higher up you go who are the worst. It's the solicitors, the police. They are the biggest wife beaters. Look it up. Go and study your stuff.
Actually, I've read their MPC in the Chiswick Refuge. I've read that.
Ah, let me tell you about MPC. She got all the bloody... she got the money, she got all the thing and the toy boy. It was a group of black women in Leeds who opened up the first woman's refuge. Spare Rib, go back to your research, there it's written. Spare Rib will tell you about matriarchy. Sorry, because I haven't really given you... I don't want even to go into the depths.
Sorry.
It's so horrible.
Two names down at the moment.
Sorry. We accept that patriarchy exists in society to a lesser or a greater degree, but I mean the simple fact is that when our betters seized land and property, the way they seized it was using armies and used male soldiers. They were males. For obvious reasons. I won't say because male soldiers are better than women soldiers, but obviously they were in those days because it was physical. And it's a simple matter that the people who seized all the money, all the power, all the land, and all the property did so using male armies.
Right, go and tell that to Bodicea, and I can name a few others.
Well,
through the chair, please.
Do you want to comment yet, or James next? Is that right?
You call him next, yeah. No, we don't need time.
Sorry, James, yes.
Well, Gatlin's covers this subject very eloquently, I think.
Excuse
me. Order.
I think Gatlin's covered it quite eloquently.
Peace, we come in peace.
Yes. Respond to that last comment there. It's the armies that grabbed the land were men, but they were doing it for men as well. You know, we're talking about patriarchal society here. We're not looking at individuals. But when you talk about individual experiences, it's not just what happens to you in your own personal life. It's what you experience in society. You take a look at society and you see how it's made up, and you can't get away from the fact that even here, where there have been some changes in past decades, it's still a patriarchal society. It's heavily patriarchal. just look at domestic violence as just one issue. Women are being attacked. There's so much violence against women, much of it doesn't get reported. And it is men who are doing it. Yeah? You could take a few small examples and say women on women violence, but that doesn't get away from the fact that men are the perpetrators of violence against women. And that, I don't think that particular problem is actually being dealt with. I don't think that has even been reduced. I think, if anything, it might be on the increase. That's part of patriarchy.
Yeah. I wonder as well, you know, that part of that is, that point is being on the increase. I wonder how much that could possibly have to do with people's conditions. You know, please don't think I'm trying to make any excuses for anybody. I just wonder how this thing happens. Because we'd also have to see how long it would take in a different kind of society for that to change for the better. So how much is, you know, how people get depressed for all kinds of reasons, or brought down with working conditions, they're struggling with paying bills. I think a lot of violence comes from monetary problems, doesn't it? You know, there isn't enough to do this, to do that, to do the other. And I just wonder, I haven't got a clue about this, but I just wonder how much of it is to do with the actual pressures of living. Life is very difficult for a lot of people. Is it possibly part of it? And I also, I did think, but I didn't think I put it into what I was saying. I didn't know it was going to go on this tack so strongly. But, you know, this is something to deal with. Socialist society have a long way to go in this kind of development, doesn't it? I'm asking questions for you, you know.